We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Backliners Podcast. Agro and Barracuda, as per usual. I got to welcome you to the Backliners, presented by Prize Picks. Download the Prize Picks app and use code Backliners for a deposit match up to $100. Barry,
yes?
I've got bad news that I intentionally did not share with you before we were live on the air. I got 3.5 hours of sleep last night.
And then, why did you do that?
Well, my day yesterday was not ideal.
What happened?
I go this a couple weeks ago, like maybe 2 months ago, I go to my eye doctor for my yearly eye doctor, you know, checkup, because I've got really bad eyes and need contacts, so I need to, like, refresh that prescription. They tell me that my eye pressure is really high. And that means I'm at risk for glaucoma, which means I can lose my vision. This is not chill by me. So I have to schedule with a glaucoma specialist, okay? That takes until... We have to fast forward, like, their next opening is, like, 2 months from now. And I'm like, yo, guys, like, I do have my family history has some glaucoma, but that's from the people in my family who have good eyesight. It's more common for this type of glaucoma called narrow-angle glaucoma if you have, like, 20/20 vision. And I do not. As previously stated, I have really bad vision. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I've never had a problem with this. Are we really sure? Can I, like, come back and get on a different day and get my eye pressure tested? And the doctor was like, you can, but I still think you should probably go. I go to the glaucoma specialist yesterday. They absolutely crush my eyes. Like, I got, like, 4 different numbing drops in my eyes. They, like, poked my cornea a whole bunch. It was really uncomfortable. Like, I got omega dilated. Like, I literally couldn't have my eyes open, like, in the hallway because it was so bright and I had such a bad headache from it. I go through, like, 2 hours of testing, and then I get to the doctor, and he goes, I don't know why you're here, bro. All your numbers are really good. Your pressure is really normal. You nailed all the tests. Everything's fine.
He fist bumped you and you guys.
Yeah. And I'm like, great. Can't wait for this bill. So then I come home and I can't even keep my eyes open because, like, my eyes are so dilated. And so I just go to sleep because I can't do anything else. Right.
Yeah.
I sleep for like 3.5 hours in the afternoon and I wake up and then my sleep schedule's just boomed. Like, I can't fall back asleep because my allergies are terrible. I slept for 3.5 hours. And Calvin is getting two more teeth, and he has a teething fever. That's, like, a thing for babies. They get, like, fevers whenever their teeth are coming in. Not great design on the human body.
Yeah, we should patch that.
Like, it's so uncomfortable. It's got to hurt so bad anyways for his teeth to be cutting through his gums. He has to get a fever on top of that? So I get like 3.5 hours of sleep, but I'd already called off for today because it's Joe's spring break and we were taking Calvin to the Georgia Aquarium for the first time. In the aquarium in Georgia.
I don't think he'll remember it.
He won't. It's really just for us. But also for him because he loved it. He was having such a good time. But man, that is draining because we live like over an hour from downtown and like we got home from the aquarium and I was like, dude, my brain is so shot. I just have no sleep. So this is gonna be a good episode. That's the preamble right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that sounds like you haven't been having a good time lately. And
we had a great time at the aquarium. It was just very exhausting and tiring, which, you know, will happen.
Have you thought about swapping doctors off of that first guy?
Yeah, I'm not going back to them. I got tilted.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, that tilted me for sure. And look, I know it was with my best interest at heart, like all that kind of stuff. I knew I didn't have a problem, but I didn't know, you know, I can't know. So like I should do the right thing and follow the medical professional's advice and like all that kind of stuff. But man, I'm going to be, the real tilt is going to come from the bill from this glaucoma specialist. That's what's going to really get me. That's what's really going to grind my gears.
You should be fine.
Should be.
Question mark?
Should be. Yep. Should be.
I also say that now as a very spoiled person who has good insurance through the company I work for, and this is such an eye-opener from the 10 years I paid for insurance myself, and it was like $450 and they didn't cover anything.
Yeah.
And now it's like a third or a fourth of that price, and they cover everything?
Yep.
So, hopefully your insurance is the same way.
Yeah, Hi-Rez does have good insurance. The insurance that we have is, like, the kind where we are, like, we have to hit our deductible, and they don't cover a ton until we hit our deductible, but then once we do, everything's 100% covered. Pro tip for if anyone out there is planning on, you know, potentially having a baby or, you know, having a big surgery or that kind of thing.
Yeah, you gotta min-max that.
It's, you gotta do it that way. And we will hit it, but it's gonna suck until we do. And that's, you know, just how insurance is a for-profit industry that everyone's really cool with. Everyone thinks that that's actually chill. That they're explicitly out to make money. That's awesome, I think. For sure. Anyways, let's talk best worlds. I put it out in our community Discord. I put it out on Twitter asking for some people's preferences on topic. I do have some cool guests coming up. And once we get into Smite 2's like more public releases, I'm going to have a lot more content to talk about and a lot more people to come in and interview and all that kind of stuff. But until that happens, we're in kind of a waiting pattern on Smite 2 content. But I think I've got a sick guest coming up next week that even Barry doesn't know about yet. It's handy.
I prefer to be surprised.
Yeah, that's fine. But I did want to say this. A lot of people said that we should talk about Summit 1G playing Smite.
As a person who has a job who cannot watch Twitch, I know nothing.
I also know absolutely nothing. Sick that Summit, you know, was interested in trying it. You know, I've heard that he has had some issues with stream snipers and all that kind of stuff. That obviously stinks. Don't know what else we could possibly say other than we wish that didn't happen. Like, as far as us as individuals on this podcast, as far as me as a company employee, I hope everyone knows that I am legitimately as powerless as you all in making something happen to change that. That is just not my purview whatsoever. So, just to get ahead of that, you know, I hope he has fun, and is gearing up and getting excited for Smite 2, but enjoying Smite 1 in the meantime. That's all I got on the Summit situation. That's about it.
All I know is he like raged, and I think people were like stream sniping or
the like some punch like that like twitch emote of him like punching his cam, like, so good. So that's like, you know, kind of par for the course. I'm gonna cough a lot as well because of my allergies. I'm sorry. I'm gonna try and mute my mic when I can, but not always gonna work.
Yeah, I took Allegra, so I'm chilling today.
That is so smart. I have them downstairs, didn't take it though. All right, another big topic that people wanted us to talk about that I've seen a couple times is world's tier lists. And I like this idea for a topic a lot. I do think we need to establish some ground rules on what our grading criteria is for this tier list. So, in my opinion, Barry, it's pretty simple for me. I'm personally thinking that the best way to rank these is most enjoyable worlds to watch as a viewer. That's the way that it's going to be most widely applicable to our audience. I will, of course, have some insight on how fun these were to cast, or, you know, you will have some insight on how fun they were to play, but I think they should be in our tier list as how fun they would have been, or how fun they are to go back and watch, in our favorites that way. Does that sound okay to you?
Yeah, so we're rating, okay, is it a tier list like 1 to 10, or is it a tier list like S,
let's
A,
do, let's B? Let's do S, A, B. Yeah, that's okay. what I was thinking.
Good. Yeah, because I'm like, it's going to be impossible for me to rate the worlds like 1 through 10. Like, I feel like it's going to be just kind of just lying, I think, if I'm like, oh yeah, this one's like 8th and this one's 9th. Like,
right.
I don't know.
No, I agree. I think putting them in tiers, I don't think anything's going to go below B tier. In fact, in my document that I started, which is an untitled notepad, you got something? You have a world that you weren't a huge fan of?
The world's at home.
Yeah. That one was less fun to watch, but I will say this. I think when it comes to game quality, that was season 7.
I think so.
Season 7, season 8 were the two at-home worlds. I think season 7 had S-tier games. And I was going to argue to put it in S tier. As far as the worlds to go back and watch.
Was that the... Oh, wait.
That was the PK year. 8 was the Leviathan's year.
Okay, yeah, that one's the worst.
Yeah, that one was probably the worst. Yeah.
If okay.
I will allow that one to be in the C tier.
Yeah. Well, I got those mixed up. Yeah, that one... I think we were in studio for that one, yeah. Right?
Yes, you were in studio for that one.
Yeah, that one was
7,
terrible.
You were all at home. 8, yeah. You were at least in studio.
Because 7, we got to see the Cuvo punching his chair.
Yes.
And that was a good quality clip.
Iconic. Okay, eight. We gotta go from the bottom. We gotta start at season 1.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's gonna be mayhem, you know?
But I wasn't a spectator for season 1.
That's fine. Think about it, like, for if you were...
Think about winning worlds.
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone is going to assume that season 1 is going to be high. The game quality in season 1, I'll be honest, I don't remember anything outside of the semifinal between you guys and Cog Red. You guys beat them in semis, right?
Yeah.
You beat them in semis. And then your finals, of course, against Titan. I don't remember a single other set from that Worlds. And I have not watched it since probably that year, to be fair, which was over 10 years ago.
Never rewatched it either, but I haven't rewatched any Worlds games. So.
Have you never rewatched Worlds games?
No. I mean, I'll watch, like, bits and pieces of games, but I'll never sit down and be like, okay, time to rewatch, like, Season 6 Worlds Finals. I'll watch, like, clips or, like, sometimes specific games, but never going back to watch.
Sure.
Like, full sets or anything.
Yeah, I mean, Season 1, my initial thought is putting it in A tier. You know, just the massive prize pool, the first Worlds event, contribute to the aura of that event. From what I remember of finals, as a spectator, you know, the highlight clips obviously like stand out, but it was kind of like you guys kind of rolled them games 1 and 2, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah.
And then you guys got rolled games 3 and 4.
Yep.
And then you rolled them game 5.
Well, game 5 was close-ish, but our team comp was just so much better.
And then MLC stealth ripped through. Then.
Yeah, and then we also got Alquong, who was kind of OP. And then they also didn't get Ymir or Ares, which were also very OP for them, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the ambiance and all, you know, just being the first one, I don't think I can put it in B tier, but I'm having a hard time saying that's an S tier Worlds, in my opinion. As a viewer, that's where I'm at. Do you have a significant grudge against that evaluation?
No, not really. I think the only reason I would potentially rate it higher was just because the international teams.
Mm-hmm.
I was a big fan of all the international teams, and I got really frustrated with the way that, like, Worlds was handled and the other lands were handled towards the international teams. So I always wanted them to, like, be at events and be at more events.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, one of the last few times, I think, that we got to see them at Worlds.
They got World spots up through Season 4, I want to say.
Yeah. But I think that I think that's when Tencent started doing less with Smite, I think?
Yes, I believe that is true.
But yeah. I wanted more international games, basically is what I'm saying.
Yeah, the international games were fun.
But I would agree. I think I'd go with A.
Alright, A for Season 1. Season 2, obviously the standout set was you guys versus Epsilon. Epsilon kind of rolled throughout the rest of the bracket and pretty much rolled enemy in finals. I mean, you know, Chaos had the really sweet Jonquil teleport play. There were some pretty cool moments. If you count Super Regionals as part of the Worlds event, Season 2 Super Regionals were crazy because that's when Envy were the top seed in NA and then didn't end up qualifying. Eager had a run that year, if memory serves, in Super Regionals. The Super Regionals that year went pretty nuts because Enemy wasn't even supposed to qualify. That they kind of made a dark horse run to even get into Worlds and then made it all the way to Finals. I forget who they beat on the other side.
Yeah, we beat Eager because Omega was on Eager, I think.
Yeah.
And then we had Baskin.
Yep.
I don't remember if there were games after that for Eager. I don't remember the order of the layout of Super Regionals that year. I just remember beating Eager and then qualifying.
Yeah, you guys qualified early. Paragon, that's right. Thank you, Just a Name. They beat Paragon on the other side. Man, that Paragon team, holy. What were you going to say, Barra? Go ahead.
I was saying Paradigm. You keep saying Paragon.
Oh, Paragon. Sorry. It's cut off by my webcam. Paradigm. Yes. Thank you. Paradigm. Yes. Paragon. Yeah. I don't know. 3.5 hours of sleep. Get over it. L plus ratio.
You're in a...
Told you. Yeah. I don't know. Like, you're set against Epsilon in the semis. One of the greatest Smite sets of all time. We've talked about it fairly recently in this podcast is like a true inspiration for many people, including myself, to like dive more heavily into Smite. And I think that set plus how good Super Regionals were just makes me want to put Season 2 in S tier, which feels a little troll. Maybe it should be like top of A. But I mean, that set was just so, like, iconic.
Yeah, because it was also, there was a lot of hype behind that set for Epsilon. Like, will they perform at LAN? Will they perform at Worlds? And, like, going into it, it was just kind of us versus them, I think, was the set that everyone was looking forward to. Like, the returning world champions and then this insane, insanely good team out of Europe. And I think that was one of the biggest, like, NA versus EU sets of all time. Which I always thought that those rivalries meant a lot. Like, I think region-based Smite was always more hype for the fans. And always more hype for me, because it just meant more, I think.
Yeah.
That sounds weird saying it meant more, but it kind of just did.
Sure.
Like, it felt like a better win, I guess. Like, if you beat them. But we didn't beat a lot of European teams, but that was a really good set. I don't know if I could put it in S just based off of that set, but I could definitely go like A plus. I mean, I wouldn't be mad if we did put it in S.
Okay, no, I like an A plus tier here. I'm gonna do an A plus tier. Season 2 in parentheses carried by C9 Epsilon. Great, there we go. Okay, season 3. Season 3 was my first Worlds as a caster. It had the group stage super regionals, which I thought were really sick. Well, it had the group stage land into super regionals, into Worlds, and there were a ton of really crazy sets in that lead up. It had the Nozix Raw set against Allegiance, where a LATAM team beat an NA team for the first time. It had two really, really good semifinal matchups where it was you guys versus Energy, formerly Epsilon, and Eager versus Obey. That Eager Obey set went 5 and was really good. Your set versus Energy went 5-2, didn't it?
Yep.
And then finals. Finals went 3-1, if memory serves, but there were really close games in the finals, and it was Variety popping off on the Rat and the Thanatos solo, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be biased here because, again, this was my first Worlds casting. I went to Season 2 Worlds as a player for Xbox, but I felt like the quality of game overall was much better in Season 3 than it was in Season 2. And it was still at Cobb and had all that awesome energy and all that kind of stuff. I kind of want to put Season 3 in S tier. I think that was an excellent Worlds.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's just Season 2, but better. Like, there was still a really hype set. Mm-hmm. And then Variety kind of carried the other side of the bracket. Mm-hmm. With hype plays and he made his sets hype.
I mean, Eager Obey was really sick because Eager pulled out the like proxy and mid strat with Anubis, where they walk between towers. At was level that one,
Worlds?
Yeah,
I thought that was before Worlds.
I think they started doing it. They did it like once before that. I you guys were scrim partners with them, weren't you?
I would assume so.
I think you were, and they hadn't done it with Anubis at the very least. I don't think.
Is that DJ Pernicus?
That was, yep. That was Pern, Aurore, Best, Zap, and Divios.
Wow, what a roster.
I know. They were cooking, man. And they played so well that set. They just made a couple of small mistakes, and then game 5, they gave Twig and Prime they gave Obey Fenrir, Zeus, Sylvanas. And it was like all mid 3v3 pressure. And they just couldn't fight into the Zeus, Sylvanas, Fenrir. You know, that's just so much level 5 pressure. And they just got kind of blown out through mid.
I'm not surprised I don't remember this set at all. I don't know if I watched this set.
It was good. I remember I casted that set, and then I got off of it, and I got told, and I had joined the casting team in August. And I was surprised that I had gotten a semifinal, and I got off that set, and Adonis, who was the lead caster at the time, was like, hey man, you did a really good job. You're casting finals tomorrow with me and Hindu Man. And I was like, excuse me? What? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Because less than 6 months earlier, I was literally just an Xbox mid laner. And that was like the hardest it's ever been for me to sleep was that night right before finals. I just remember being like so in my head and so stressed about it because I just like wasn't prepped. But it turned out pretty well. No complaints.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I don't think I ever watched this set, honestly. I was skipping through like highlights of it, and I don't remember.
Dude, Zap popped off on Uller. He had a couple big Uller plays.
Were we first set that day, or were we second set?
I want to say you were second set that day.
Okay. I
think that we were first set. Who was on that game? I think it was like me, Husey, and Trix Tank, I want to say, were like the casters for that game.
Trix Tank did first worlds too, right?
Yeah, I want to say he did. And then he played in the second one. Zap casted the second one, I remember. It was something, that's for sure.
I'm really digging deep into the old memory box right now.
I know. I can't believe I'm doing all this off the dome. So if any of it's wrong, don't care. all right, season four. Season four was the last year at Cobb. It was E-United's win. They beat Rival in the finals. The Rival Energy semifinal was really, really hype. You know, a team finally dethroning that squad after they'd gone back-to-back. E-United, I'm having trouble remembering who they played in the semis on the other side. Do you remember, Barra?
Nope.
Don't remember at all. Could look it up. Won't, though. I just remember thinking, E-United is so much better than every team here. It is not close.
You mean Benji?
Yeah. Yeah. they pryoed Benji. They played to his side of the map. and they pryoed Ven. And they just gave Ven pressure picks. And, you know, he played nothing but, like, Zeus and Morrigan that LAN. And Mori was a really strong pressure pick at the time. I remember I was really excited to cast that finals with FDOT because Tom hadn't gotten a final up until that point. I felt like that was my best cast up until much later in my career. I just remember feeling so prepared for that LAN. I felt like I understood the meta as deeply as I possibly could. I felt like I really understood how teams wanted to be playing the map and what every team was doing. I just remember, like, I studied so hard for that Worlds. And I just remembered feeling really, feeling like it was really worth it. You know, no one like that. It was literally just for self-satisfaction because, that type of thing I think is really hard for an untrained ear to really hear. But I just really wanted, I felt so underprepared for the year before because I didn't know I was going to be in finals, that I really wanted to, come prepared and kind of have like a set that I was like, yeah, I'm really, you know, I really went off here. And, I think Tom had a really great set. You know, obviously for the true diehards out there, they'll remember Tom calling the end of the set a little early. As a United like went in and like faked an end and Tom like called it over and then they started backing up. But he recovered super well and had a really sick like one of, you know, an end call that we use literally in every hype video for the rest of time. It was a really good set, that finals. I didn't think it was going to be, I didn't think it was close. You know, I never had any doubt that United was going to win. Like Mike stole a fire game four with Sylve, that like ended the game, but that fire was a Hail Mary. They weren't going to come back. And even if they won that game, like, E-United was never going to lose that set. I really just didn't think it was possible.
Well, was that the one where Wolfie missed Kraken?
Yep.
Secure?
That was the beginning of the Poseidon curse. Yep.
That's crazy.
Yep, that was the beginning of it.
I rate this Worlds pretty highly just because it was in a kind of fighting back against EU.
Yeah.
Just seeing how dominant EU had been, and I think that was in the middle where EU was just winning basically every LAN outside of Worlds, and then they were winning Worlds 2 before that.
Yep.
Which, as an NA fan, I remember a lot of people doubting NA for a long time between those sets, because it was just kind of like, when will NA ever come back? Like, is NA just washed? Like, is EU just permanently better?
Yep.
And then for United to win, I think that kind of brought a lot of wind back into NA's sails. And I think I would put this A plus or S.
Wow, that's pretty high.
Just because it was such a hype moment when they won.
Yeah, the ending was sick. The crowd was so NA favored because, you know, it's in NA.
Yeah. And then,
like, I don't even remember who they beat in semis. Who did they beat in semis?
Obey.
They beat Obey. That's right. Yeah. I don't know. What was your team's deal this year, Barra?
You guys didn't make semis? This was the year where Mask had a really bad game one.
Oh, and that's then right.
I died first blood game two before the game started.
That's right. Dude, Mask had a really sick game two, though, didn't he?
Yep.
Was he playing Merc?
I don't remember. Ushmer.
It was either Merc or Naja, I feel like. No, he had a really Ushmer, bad Naja game one, right?
Yeah. I remember feeling like I'm going to have to do something to where we make this game, like, in our favor in the beginning, and then I died. And I was like, oh, well, we're chalked.
yeah.
And, yeah.
Who was your mid laner that year?
Baskin.
That's right. That was... Yeah, Baskin was playing mid, Mask jungle. Did you have Scary in solo then?
I don't remember.
You...
Maybe? Was it Aqua?
No, you didn't have Aqua yet. When was the Luminosity year? That was season three.
Yeah.
Was the LG year. You didn't still have Scary then. You had... this is way worse than I thought it was going to be on my brain. Okay, can't remember. Oh, well, GG.
I think it's Aqua.
I thought you had Aqua and Andy together. I didn't think that you had Aqua before you had Andy again.
Well, Mask wanted to pick up Aqua.
Oh, then maybe you did have Aqua. Damn, that's earlier than I thought. I thought Aqua started playing season 5, if I remember correctly. But, you know, there it is. I don't think I can get... I can't get to S tier. I can get behind A plus tier. But here's the question. Higher or lower than season 2? Neon says it was Aqua. They just looked it up. Thank you, Neon. It was Aqua.
Lower than season 2?
I would agree with that. A plus tier... Lower than season 2.
That's fine.
Okay.
Honestly, I view those kind of the same anyway, so.
Sure. Season 5 was the first DreamHack Worlds.
Terrible.
Yeah. Look.
Terrible.
Look. Okay.
The atmosphere was just atrocious compared to Cobb.
Yes.
Like, it was Cobb so much worse.
Look, Cobb was, like... just insular, close-knit, you know, everyone here is here for Smite and Smite alone. I think that I don't blame the team for wanting to try DreamHack. And if you knew, you know, I don't think it's my place to say publicly, but the amount of money it was starting to cost to do these events at Cobb was... just too much for it to make any sense. DreamHack, the first year of DreamHack was worse than the second year of DreamHack. Season 6 was better than season 5. You know, I think the DreamHack team understood what we needed more. Mm-hmm. We knew what we needed to do better, all that kind of stuff. That first year wasn't the best. I will agree. So in person... the experience definitely went lower. The game quality, though, season 5 was a banger Worlds. E-United lost in quarters when they'd picked up Baskin for mid. And they lost to, I thought that they were going to repeat. And then they get 2-0'd, I think. Maybe they got 2-1'd in quarters by a couple young upstarts named Paul and Sam for Soccer and Neil Ma. Those guys beat him in quarters. And I remember, I couldn't believe it, man. I was sitting there like shell shocked, because I was really confident that United was going to be really great that year. But man, they dismantled them. Like, it was not close. That was a really sick quarter. This was the year where Yamin couldn't come at the last minute for energy, so Homifei played mid for them. Which did not work, of course, as it never could, but it was really funny, like, to watch Homifei, like, playing with a bunch of EU players in the mid lane. and he didn't do that bad. They got crushed, but, you know, they got, like, 1v5'd by Deathwalker playing Erlong Shen solo. He, like, walked up and just owned them on speed at level 1, I remember. This was Invade meta, I believe. Yes, it was Invade meta. Season 6 was the true Invade meta. There was some invading in Season 5. But not like the supports just running around, like, messing with the jungler all the time, like it became in Season 7. That rival team looked so good. Splice, if you remember, they were like 1 in, you know, they were 1 in X, where X is the total number of games in the split minus 1. They were terrible in spring. They boot camped over the summer and were like 500. And they came out and looked really good in the fall split. And then they end up winning the whole freaking thing. It was such a crazy turnaround from them. You know, this was Sino, who, by the way, we were definitely remiss to not bring Sino up in the conversation for Jungle Mount Rushmore last episode. My apologies to Brooks. He definitely deserves to be in that conversation. Like, Mozwall and mid, you know, Divios starting in duo and then teleporting over to solo, like, doing all this crazy stuff. Aurora playing like RDO, if I remember correctly, like just a really sick run from them, and then their set against Rival in the finals is obviously unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember Cyclone playing Apollo at one point, and basically the level 1 3v3 between the duo laners, and I was like, Apollo's not even good. And then once I saw the passive come out and then them basically win the level 1 fight because of the passive, I was like, oh, that makes sense, actually. Like, if the game is entirely about the level 1, it makes sense to pick a god that has, like, that good of a level 1.
Yep.
But I wasn't even, like, thinking about that, and that aspect of Apollo, I guess, and then that really changed how I viewed the character.
Yeah.
Cyclone
started that year playing like Vimana and Bologna ADC. And I remember distinctly saying, like, why is he even playing the role? Like, if these are the things he wants to play, put him back in solo.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't be asked to deal with these things. Not my best take in general, but he was playing on West Coast ping, and just couldn't play as a hunter, play the hunter characters at the time, because of the ping. And then they boot camped on the East Coast, and Cyclone immediately became, like, insane on traditional ADCs. Surprise, surprise. Mm-hmm. I remember this Worlds very well from a caster point of view. I remember in the semifinal between Dig and Splice, Dig got 3-0'd, but they were three pretty long games, if I remember correctly. including a base defense from Aurora, where he, like, 1v4 defended the Titan as Ardeo, and then they chased them out and won the game. I remember I blew out my voice. The only time I've ever blown out my voice. You know, I've lost it from being sick before while I was a caster, or, you know, after finals, you could definitely hear my voice, you know, at the after party was, like, really bad. Especially in those early years when my, like, vocal conditioning wasn't great. I remember QO Fred was playing Sirket and Mozwell was playing Zeus. And Fred chased his, and this was game 3, I want to say. QO chased, followed Mozwell to his own red and full comboed him. And Mozwell just full comboed him back and killed him, just out DPS'd him and killed him. And it caught me so off guard. I thought he was so dead. And I had just, like, finished a point, and I was casting it with Finch. It was Finch's first semi. And he would never say it, but he was definitely nervous. and I was told I had just finished a long diatribe. Who would have known? And I was completely out of air. And just a quick vocal thing: you can create volume in two ways. You can either push. You can either strain your vocal cords and constrict your airway to up the, like, air to space ratio and therefore get more volume, or you can push harder from your diaphragm and push more air out of the same space in your throat. And that's the way to do it. The latter is the way to do it if you don't want to lose your voice, because you lose your voice because your vocal cords get strained. If you control your volume through your diaphragm and through just pushing more air instead of using your vocal cords, then you're able to keep your voice for a significantly longer period of time. I had no air in my stomach and in my lungs, but I went like, whoa, because Mozwell killed him, and it instantly cracked my voice. And the rest of the game, I could barely talk because my voice was so bad. And I remember just thinking, like, man, I'm supposed to be up here, like, carrying Finch through his first semi. And he had the best cast of his career up until that point in that set. Thank God Splice swept them, because I could not have done any more games. And I was slated to do finals the next day, and that was the first set on Saturday. I did not speak from the moment that set ended until 10 minutes before finals the next day, because that's the best thing you can do for your voice, is to just not use it. I literally wrote, I made my phone background, sorry, can't talk, like, saving my voice. And when fans would come up to me, I would just, like, show them my phone. And I didn't say a word to my girlfriend at the time, now wife. I didn't say a word to anyone. I just wrote if I needed to say anything, chugged a bunch of tea, and then my voice was good to go for finals. But I was very nervous about it.
That was the longest story. I don't even know how long.
You know, that's what I bring. You know, that's what I'm bringing to the table. Now imagine if Fred jumped on Mozwell right now. You know what I mean? I'd have no more air. I'd have nowhere to go.
Yeah, that was the year Arkle got a pentakill. It was against us.
It was a DSI.
It was because we picked Athena and then put it support when I said not to and pick some bans. And everything would have gone better if we just picked an aggressive support, and then we picked Athena for solo, and then we were like, Jeff, can you take it? And I'm like, please no. And then we took Athena for support, and then we lost the game. We lost duo pressure, and then that was everything that mattered, and then we lost everything.
Yeah, that meta was so duo pressure centric, and so yep. Solo lane pressure did not matter at all. Like, at all. Divios was playing Terra solo, or Geb solo, ganking duo level 1, then teleporting back to his tower, because his lane just didn't matter.
And I remember scrimming at Splice, and we were just so much better than Splice. And I was like, if we just played Splice, we would be in the finals. Like, All we had to do was just pick duo pressure and get me ahead, and I would have won. And I just remember getting off that set being so annoyed. Oh, yeah, that was the set. I walked off. I remember this. I walked off, and some guy was like, "Hey, Barisar, your brother died. How'd you deal with that?" As I, like, 20 feet from the stage, as I was walking off, I'm like, Jeff about decked the dude.
Yeah, and I'm surprised he didn't.
He was so close, and I was,
Good lord.
I was a bit taken back, and I was like, I just gave him some answer off the top of my head. But yeah, I remember that moment.
Horrific.
That set stuck in my head just because of that guy. I remember
seriously.
That second game so well. So I think that was when I was building, Devos or Trans, and I didn't even get to finish my stacks that game, I think. Because they picked Fender and just blew us out. I didn't get a chance to do anything that game. It was over literally from picks and bans.
That is crazy.
And that was when Fender was, super, super, super broken in support. He had enough damage to just kill everyone.
Yeah, Blackthorn first.
Yeah, he was just... the supports were the carries, and the damage dealers at that point. I don't remember much from that world, and I also hated the venue. I'll let you completely rate this one, because I don't have much of an experience on this one.
Yeah, I remember this world pretty fondly, just because I remember liking Splice's run. I thought corner matches were pretty interesting. Finals was really good. I think I'm going to put it... I want to put it in A tier. Do I want to put it above Season 1? Probably not. I think a little bit below Season 1 in the A tier is where we have it. You wish you could see a tier list right now? I got you. Here's my very official covering up Bera. Here you go. I'll zoom in a little bit. Here's the current tier list. Season 3 is the only one in S. Season 2 and Season 4 in A+. Season 1, Season 5 in A. Season 8, preemptively, in the C tier alone for now. Before we keep it going, we got to shout out our sponsor for today's episode, and that is Prize Picks. What is Prize Picks, you ask? Bear, could you ask what is Prize Picks?
What is Prize Picks?
Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll on in. Excuse me. March Madness coming to an end. Not too late to get your picks in. I hope some of you are watching the... LSU-Iowa women's game, because that game was awesome. Pulled more numbers than, any Major League Baseball game last year. Pulled more numbers than any NBA game outside of one game of the finals or something like that. Absolutely crazy numbers. Shout out to that game. Hope you got your picks in for that. Bera, I have some, for fun, examples of how easy Prize Picks can be here. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
More than or less than one blowout by Calvin. A blowout, by the way, is when their poop explodes out of their diapers and soaks into their clothes and anything around them. More than or less than two blowouts from Calvin in the car so far this week. It is Wednesday, my dudes.
I'm going to go more than.
Correct. Every time that kid is in the car, he blows out. He loves it. Just like that. Bera is on the money. And then let's see you're paying attention here. More than or less than 4 hours of sleep your boy is on right now. Bera?
Less than.
Less than. Correct. That's why this ad read is weird. And so is the rest of the show. Just like that. Bera has won. It's that easy with Prize Picks. So big shout out to them. Download the app today and use code BACKLINERS for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code BACKLINERS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more. Pick less. It's that easy. There you go. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring today's episode. Okay, on to season six. season six was SK's run. It was another DreamHack Worlds.
S plus.
This world has got
to
be.
We don't have to talk about six and seven. Just throw them in S. They're some of the best worlds ever. Some of the best moments ever. Just S for both. I don't even know if Neil's still in here. I don't want to inflate him more.
I know.
I hate the guy.
Okay, we have to order them, though. I agree they're both S tier. Currently, Season 3 is the only other S tier. Where are you rating these worlds in the S tier in relation to one another?
6 above 7.
Ooh. Yeah, okay, it's really hard to put 7 above 6, because 7, 8, 9... because it wasn't in person, right? It was in studio. But
that's the only reason.
The games were the best. Season 7, the games were the best they could ever be, in my opinion. You had a reverse sweep, again, where Renegades, they were Renegades that year, weren't they? The Cherio, Nika, Vote, Darnest squad, were they Renegades again that season? They were Renegades. No, you were Renegades season 7.
Yep, you're
right. They were Space Station. Space Station getting reverse swept by PK, just like they had the year before. And then the finals, I think... Didn't PK defend the reverse sweep? They went up 2-0, and then Rival came back and won 2. And then PK wins game 5. I believe that's how it went.
I don't remember the order.
You know, Paul was just doing things on the Battleground of the Gods that have never been done before and will never be replicated. Season 7 and Season 6, but particularly Season 7, I thought he was just unbelievable.
Season 7 Paul was the hardest anyone's ever carried, or worlds ever.
Yeah, man. Alright, I'm gonna agree. I'll put 6 above 7, but I'm gonna say in parentheses only because online.
Yep.
Otherwise, it would be the top. If you're talking about just being able to watch the games, and also for the record, I thought season 7 was the best casting of any worlds ever. Just top to bottom. I thought our team was unbelievably strong. I thought the team did such a good job. Mifflin had an insane semifinals call. He had a great set in semis with Finch. I alluded to it earlier, I thought season 4 was the best cast of my career until... Season 7 finals, I think that still is the best set I've ever done. So good. I felt like everyone was clicking on all cylinders, like Dulcin, Gore, like they were killing it. Like, I just felt like that was the strongest the team had ever been. And the games were just as good. And I'm still salty that world couldn't have been in front of a crowd because I felt like we casted that well in an isolated studio, which is so hard to do. Like, it is impossible for me to explain how much harder it is to bring the right amount of energy to the moment when it's just two of you alone in a room. If we would have done that in front of a crowd, like, it would have been insane. It would have been absolutely nuts, but, you know, nothing we can do about that. Okay, there it is. Season 6, Season 7, the two best worlds in terms of game qualities ever. Season 8, we already have an NC tier. Don't really have to cover that a whole lot more. Leviathans were just too dominant online, you know, plus ratio.
Yeah, exactly. They were so good that it made everything else boring. And it just... They dominated teams so insanely hard that the games weren't close. And because the games weren't close, they weren't enjoyable to watch. This isn't anything against Leviathans or anything, but they just... They dominated so hard that it was kind of just a snooze fest.
Yeah.
Like, they were just so much... They were leagues ahead of everyone else. And it was just... boring. And then also being in studio was just, I think being in studio was honestly worse than being at home. For some reason, it weird.
Yeah, potentially.
I feel like it probably shouldn't have been, but it was. But it might have also just been due to them just winning so much harder.
Yep.
Or being so much better, sorry.
I would agree with that. Season 9, the Camelot Kings run, incredibly impressive. This world gets a big boost from atmosphere because it was our first at the Arlington venue, and the energy was unmatched. Certainly the best energy since season 4. I think probably the best energy we've ever had. Until maybe season 10. Like, season 10 was right up there with it. But the Kings also were really dominant. A lot of the games didn't turn, you know, not a lot of long sets. Felt like it was kind of chalk throughout. Like, not a lot of upsets either. I'm kind of tempted to put season 9 in, like, you know, and if I'm factoring environment, I could maybe be convinced to bottom of A tier. But my gut is telling me B tier for this.
That's what I was thinking as well. I honestly don't remember much else from that world besides the environment being really good and Kings being so dominant. And Kings games were just, I don't want to say boring.
But no, just they had a boring play style to watch. They did. We can say it.
The way they played, and it was just, they were just out macro you, and they were just so much better at macro that, like, I've always enjoyed the style of games from watching where they're just scrappy and they're just fighting nonstop, and that's why for a while I was saying SEC was more enjoyable to watch than SPL, because SPL had gotten so, like, min-maxed and macro-heavy that it was just a bit boring, because some games just wouldn't have kills until, like, 15-20 minutes.
Yeah.
And Kings, I don't think Kings completely brought that playstyle back, but they definitely favored that slow playstyle. And it was just not fun to watch. But I think it goes in bottom of A just because of the atmosphere.
Okay. I can get behind that.
And I think that venue really brought back, like, a Cobb family feel to it for Smite. And I think that feeling is very important for Smite.
Yep, agreed.
And I think just being able to have everyone in the same venue that's Smite related since season 4 was very important for Smite, and I would have to go bottom A.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you there. I think bottom of A is appropriate for that world. And that brings us to season 10. I think the games, you know, season 10 Dragon sets were absolutely nuts. Their semifinal against the Titans, one of the greatest sets I've ever watched. Their set against Oni Warriors, really, really good. Venue, top tier. Energy, top tier. I kind of want to put it below season 6, season 7 in the S tier. I think it was a top tier Worlds.
That's exactly where I would have put it.
We're right there, man.
Literally word for word, I agree with everything. I don't think it's better than 6 and 7, but it definitely deserves to be in S tier. Just because of them kind of defeating their demons in the reverse sweep, and then also reverse sweeping someone.
Yeah.
And it definitely cannot go lower than S tier, and I don't think it's better than 6 and 7.
Does season 3 deserve to be in the S tier? I think it's the bottom. I think it's below 10. Should it be top of A+?
Trying to think. What was the finals for season 3?
It was Energy Obey. That was like varieties, like Rat.
No, Thana. Probably top of A.
Not even A+?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that existed. Yeah, top of A+.
I think I'm down with that. Okay, here, I'll cover up. Oh, I can't cover up my own. Sorry, Barry, you're getting covered up again. Here's our current. You know what? I'm deleting C tier and putting season 8 in B tier because it feels toxic to skip a tier to put it lower. So I'm not going to. Here is our current tier list. Season 6 and season 7 and season 10 are your S tier. Season 7 would be the best overall, but it is second only because online. A+ season 3, season 2, which was carried by C9 Epsilon, and season 4. A, season 1, season 5. And season 9, and B, season 8. Any final advocacy for any movement here, Barrow? Are you happy with this?
I'm happy. I think it's good.
I'm happy with this as well. Nicely done. I can post it on Twitter or something like that if I feel like it, but we'll see if I do. All right, before we get to the random question of the week, we got to let you know about our other sponsor for today's episode. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Today, I'm on bi-weekly, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Every other week, therapy sessions these days. And today was Therapy Wednesday for me. And I did it on 3.5 hours of sleep, which I'm sure my therapist really appreciated. But it was really good. And, you know, I think it is so important. Like, I literally look forward to it when it's therapy week. I'm just such an advocate for it. And my brain has ceased functioning. That's all I got. Go to therapy. It's good. It's good for you. You don't need to be in a terrible place in order to benefit from therapy. I think literally everyone should try it out. Everyone should go and give it a shot. And BetterHelp makes it really, really easy. The biggest boundaries of therapy are finding the therapist that's right for you, which BetterHelp makes significantly easier. And, you know, that, oh, I don't know if switching therapists is such a pain, all that kind of stuff. Like, that's a big barrier. BetterHelp takes care of that as well. So, in my opinion, I think everyone should try it. And I think if you're going to try it, there's no better way to try it than BetterHelp. Using the phrase try it 15 more times in a row, because I said it so much. Barra, anything to add? I mean, how could you add to what is such a perfect ad read?
Yeah, I think the only way I can add to it is just by telling you to try it.
Smart, man. It's
a really, really, really good idea. Yep. And as Agra said, basically, and anyone can benefit from it. I'm a very big proponent of therapy, and I think everyone should at least try it. I also think it's okay to try therapy for a little bit, take a break from therapy, go back to therapy.
Yep.
Because sometimes going over things can be a bit overwhelming, and just sometimes you just need a break. And I think BetterHelp allows you to do that pretty easily. And yeah, you should just try it.
Retweet all that. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/backliners today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/backliners. Big shout out to Backliners for sponsoring today's episode. All right, it's random question of the week time. This is, of course, from our community Discord. Patreon.com/backliners, place to go if you want to hop in there. Let's see. We got Seafog. Seafog recently heard the opinion that salsa is superior to ketchup in every situation. Agree or disagree, and why?
What?
Well, here's the thing. I don't like ketchup, and I love salsa. So I'm agreeing. I don't want salsa on my fries or on my burger. Like, I think it's a little insane to compare the two, to be honest. Like, they're just used for different things. But salsa is, in my opinion, unequivocally better. There is no situation where I'd rather have ketchup than salsa. But there are situations where I don't want salsa, you know?
I feel like these are just things that are things you can put on things, but it doesn't matter.
They're both red?
Yeah.
Like, primarily tomato?
Yeah. Like, what?
The similarities keep getting more clear. I don't know.
But they taste completely different.
So like, different. And one, because one's good and one is bad. And it's salsa and ketchup, respectively.
Like, I'm never going to put salsa on my french fries. That's...
try it. I love salsa, man. Can I give a shout-out to my favorite salsa? I hope they're listening and want to sponsor the episode. Mateo's Salsa. M-A-T-E-O. I get it at Publix, so it can't be that exclusive. Their hot salsa, delicious.
We do Pace's hot salsa. Pace's medium salsa is bad. Because me and Destiny don't like sweet salsas. Like, it needs to be... It needs to hit you. And,
yes.
But not, like, overwhelming. Like, I'm not trying to eat, like, hot sauce, but it needs to, like,
it's gonna have a little kick. My mouth. Yeah.
Exactly. And the medium and the low are just, I think it's low. Maybe, no, it's mild. They're just sweet. And, like, I don't want sweet salsa. Sweet salsa is just not for me. It doesn't do anything.
I'm with you on that. I don't know if Mateo's is vegan.
Most salsa is vegan because it's just tomatoes, onions, and lime juice and a few other things.
Yes, it is vegan. But yeah, Mateo's is my favorite salsa. Give it a shot. Shout out Mateo, sponsor the show. I did this every. I do this every time. Sorry, I'm sorry. 3.5 hours. That's my excuse. Who's a better support? Artemis or Neith? Or a different hunter?
I mean, I could just give you the genetics answer and just say Onher is probably the best.
Or the Neil Ball answer and say Hachiman?
No. Hachiman is such a bad support.
Dude, I've watched Neil absolutely crush some ranked games with Hachiman support. I can't hate on it.
I have not seen him ever crush a game.
Oh, I did.
I would say Artemis. I feel like Artemis has much better heal.
Yep.
And I think if you build cooldown, you have a 3, like, every 2 seconds, it seems like. And then the trap is also really good peel. A ping-ponging stun. And I think current builds in Smite, or just kind of, like, support hunter builds, favor Artemis a lot more. And if Neith's 2 affected teammates, I think there would be an argument, but I don't think the root's a good enough ability. And then I feel like you need a lot of CDR to really make that cook. But yeah.
Yeah. I also think Artemis is better. I do think Onher is probably... It's weird because Onher has so much less CC, but the prot shred is so good. Impale is good. Artemis, Onher, Neith, Hachiman, they're all great, you know? It's like taking your pick of your favorite spicy salsa. That's all there is to it. And last but not least, Yoma, in dishonor of April Fools, have you ever been a part of or the victim of a good / memorable prank? I do have a good answer for this one.
I honestly don't think so. I think I've always kind of just known it's April Fools. I'm sure I've gotten...
You're just built different.
When I was younger, for sure.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, my memory doesn't really serve me that well.
Yeah.
For, like, that, unfortunately. So I don't really have an answer, honestly.
Sure. Hold on, I got a cough. I have a good one, but it isn't... It's tangentially related to me, but it was when I was very young, and it happened to my mom. I actually don't know who initiated this prank, but they're a genius. My preschool teacher was named Mrs. Lyon, and she was awesome, if I remember correctly. I probably don't. I was 4. And, on April Fool's Day, my mom got a call at work saying that, I was in trouble, like I had done something bad, and she needed to call the school and talk to Mrs. Lyon about it. And they gave her the Pittsburgh Zoo's number. And so she called the Pittsburgh Zoo and they said, you know, they pick up and go hello. And she says, yeah, I need to speak to Mrs. Lyon. And they go,
oh, no.
Well, she's busy, but Mr. Giraffe is available. Something along those lines. Just an absolute zinger from the zoo. And it was, it's a hilarious joke to this day. That's a good April Fool's joke. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's harmless. It doesn't hurt anyone. It's really quick. It's a zinger. It's great. Still the best April Fool's joke I've heard.
Yeah, that was actually a really good one.
Shout out to whatever family member of mine orchestrated that. I should figure that out in the Bailey family lore. All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I will post our world's tier list on Twitter. Next week, we've got a guest lined up already. I'm a week ahead of planning. And it definitely wasn't that I asked this person with like 2 hours to go for this show and they said no, but next week, definitely not what happened. So yeah, we'll catch you next week. Until then, Barra, you know what to do.
Bye.
He knows what to do. He knows.
I did it. Sorry, I'm very distracted because Hanny's chewing on something.
Yeah, I can see him getting after it. And I was going to be like, yo, is Hanny allowed to do whatever he's doing? But then I looked and I saw that people, like, the podcast couldn't see it. So, like, it's fair game. It doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he's just going hammy on a box back there. What are you doing?
He's going hammy. Nice.
Thank you.